We ask all the questions that others don't dare. We're dads on the air. We're back, we're dads on the air.
And welcome back to Dads on the Air this 8th day of June 2010. A lovely sunny day in Sydney. And this is Bill Cable from Mediate Now. In the studio with me this morning, we have, as usual, our fearless Ian Purdy from ianpurdy.com.
Well, I'm feeling a little bit fearful this morning. What's that going to lead on to, Bill? But anyway, thank you and good morning.
And we've also got Phil York from Dads in Distress.
Good morning, Bill. Good morning, Ian. Good morning, everyone.
Well, in today's show, we've got a packed program. We've got coming up shortly, we're going to be speaking to Barry Williams, who's the National President of the Lone Fathers Association of Australia. And Barry's going to be telling us about the 2010 National Conference to be held in Canberra at Parliament House on the 16th, 17th and 18th of June. The topics for this year's conference, and remember, this only happens every 3 years that we have one of these national conferences, for the Lone Fathers Association. The topics this year are shared care responsibility laws working? Are these laws good for our children? And have we witnessed another generation of stolen children? This ties in with Ken Thompson, who's trying to track his son, Andrew, and he's presently having a bike ride through Europe. And we're hoping to hear from Ken as he travels through Europe with something of a blog of how he's getting on. Another aspect that's going to be discussed at the conference, whether contravention orders are part of the Family Law Act. Why are they not being enforced? This is an age-old question. Why is the contravener of these orders never punished by the court that made them? Why doesn't the court enforce its own rulings? Why is domestic violence portrayed as only ever perpetrated by the male involved when there's a lot of evidence of domestic violence by females, apart from anything else? And it's not just men against women, there's violence against children. The range of domestic violence should never be limited to just males against females, which is what's happening with campaigns such as the White Ribbon campaign. And finally, they're going to look at why isn't government funding shared equally between women's and men's organisations. Anyway, we'll be speaking to Barry about all that and some of the lineup of speakers that he's arranged for the for this three-day conference in Canberra. And then later on, we'll be crossing to the Northern Territory, where a researcher, Dr. Peter Foster from Charles Darwin University, has been looking at the recent study showing women can be just as violent as men, and that he's considering whether the social changes are behind a reported rise in violence among young women. So that'll be interesting, talking to Dr. Peter Foster a little bit later. And just some breaking news here, just in the connection with family violence, but an extension has been granted for the Family Violence Inquiry being conducted by the Australian Law Reform Commission. The extension has been granted for submissions until the 25th of June. The Attorney General, Robert McClelland, has said that he appreciates how important this inquiry is and how critical it is to capture the viewpoints of all the stakeholders. So at this stage, the Law Reform Commission reports that they've had 80 submissions and they're asking for further submissions, remembering that final date has now been extended to Friday, the 25th of June 2010. And also remember, if anyone has already submitted a submission, given the extension, that there's an opportunity to add to those submissions. So please send in any supplementary submissions by that new due date of Friday, 25 June 2010. Now, Phil, I think you had something to correct from last week.
Yes, thanks, Bill. Last week we reported on a tragic story about two young boys that were found dead in their family home. Reading from the story in the Herald Sun, it appeared that Mum was the perpetrator of this event. It has since came out in police investigations and reports in the media that indeed it wasn't perpetrated by Mum. It was just a tragic accident. I'm still trying to find the actual story, but from what I understand, it was something to do with an electric blanket or something that they were laying on. So
Yeah, it's easy enough to, in these tragic situations, to come to conclusions before all the evidence is in. I think we've probably seen that a few times. So anyway, that's it's still a tragic story, but not as it was originally suspected for, as in involving the mother on that occasion.
Yeah.
So, yeah, let's glad we can clear that up. And, Ian, have you got anything there for us?
Yes, yesterday's Telegraph, an article on addiction to computer games amongst children. Under the heading, Kids Lost to a Virtual World, Bruce McDougall wrote, school children have become so dangerously hooked on computer games that they were being offered live-in treatment at adolescent psychiatric facilities to wean them off their addiction. Psychiatrists said they were receiving a flood of calls from distressed families seeking help for children who had fallen victim to the condition known as pathological internet use. So there you go, P-I-U. PU or something, we could an acronym there, a new acronym. Mental health professionals in schools said schools were reporting students falling asleep in class after marathon online sessions playing highly addictive games such as World of Warcraft. One Sydney mother who had sought professional help for her 18-year-old daughter said yesterday the problem was widespread among young people. There are children dying from this, 17-year-olds committing suicide. I've been to a funeral, the woman said. They become isolated and then depressed, suffer from a lack of motivation, don't socialise or get a job. It's not just boys. Girls are sitting in front of the computer all night playing these games against others. Rivendell psychiatrist Dr. Philip Tam said, they can't stop playing. The longest I've had is a teenage schoolboy playing 37 hours non-stop with only toilet breaks. It's analogous to severe gambling. It's very seductive. An increasing number of psychologists are treating people now. There are no quality statistics, but research is being done. Many patients seeking help were in the 14 to 17-year-old age group, but health professionals believe those who presented were just the tip of the iceberg. So there you go. This is a huge problem, something completely new. 20 years ago, none of this existed. But nowadays, not only does it exist, it seems to be ubiquitous and causing psychological problems amongst children. This is this plethora of new technologies that we've got happening in the world at the moment. There's this computer revolution. The digital revolution is kind of sweeping everything before it in its path. It's a tsunami of new information, new situations that most parents really have no experience of, have not a clue what it is, where it's coming from, or how to deal with it. You know, how do you judge that this game that your child is playing and seems to be enjoying and is keeping him or her quiet and, you know, out of your hair, how do you suddenly decide that it's bad, that they shouldn't be playing it and that they're playing it too much and... you know, this is just a whole new can of worms. I mean, the fact that psychiatrists, well, you know, they'll follow the money anywhere where there's a buck if they can get paid for helping. I use that word in inverted commas. Young children kick, you know, computer addiction. Well, of course, that's where the money is. That's where they'll go. You know, sharks after blood and all that. But yeah, no, this is a pretty shocking kind of a situation. So we get our kids, we bring them up in broken families, we pump them full of Ritalin and dexamphetamines because we diagnose them as attention deficit disorder, stick them in front of a computer, get them addicted to a computer game, and wonder why we have all of these social problems.
Yes, well, that links in with our guest last week. You might recall we spoke to Maggie Hamilton, who has a new book out now called What's Happening to Our Boys, a follow-up to What's Happening to Our Girls. And Maggie goes into this area of computer games and boys spending all their time in front of computer screens in some great detail, and she has a number of very good tips for parents who find themselves in this situation. We touched on a few of them last week, but for more information on that whole topic, I can only recommend you to this book launched last week, What's Happening to Our Boys by Maggie Hamilton, and it's received very good reviews from all people in the field, from University of Western Sydney. The book was launched by actually Professor John McDonald, who is at the University of Western Sydney, and he would thoroughly recommend that this book for any parents concerned about this area. So
yes, indeed,
that's something we all need to be very much aware of. We might go to a short break, and we'll be back soon with Barry Williams.
So fast. You have to cherish every moment.
Please, Daddy.
You have a right to be involved in the life of your child.
Dad's in distress. 1300 853 437.
We're back with Dad's on the Air.
And welcome back to Dad's on the Air this 8th day of June 2010. And just prior to speaking to Dr. Peter Foster a little bit later in the program, the Crime and Justice Statistics, the New South Wales Bureau of Crime Statistics and Research has just issued a brief on female offending and is looking at the actual figures as to whether there has been an increase in the rate of assaults by young females, and whether this has increased. On the actual figures presented by the police, the number of females, the number of females proceeded against by police increased by 15%, whereas the number of male offenders remained stable. Female offenders were most likely to commit a range of crimes. The ones in which they're most likely to commit these crimes are shoplifting, committing non-domestic and domestic violence, assault, fraud, and the possession or use of drugs. The number of juvenile female offenders increased by more than a third, whereas for juvenile males the increase was less than a tenth. So there does seem to be backing for the actual statistics on the rate of assaults by young girls. Of course, we need to keep this in perspective, because notwithstanding this finding of the increase by young females, females still continue to commit significantly fewer offences than their male counterparts. But this brief has gone into some detail as to what the changes are. They specifically looked at five questions. Has there been a change in the number of female offenders over the past decade? Has the proportion of female offenders changed relative to male offenders? What offences were females most likely to commit? Has female participation in specific offences changed? Has offending among juvenile females changed? Now, we'll be coming back to those questions when we speak to Dr. Peter Foster, but on the line right now we have Barry Williams, who's the National President of the Lone Fathers Association of Australia. Barry, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Good morning, Barry, and nice to talk to you. A few days out from the National Conference, which I was surprised to see. It's only every 3 years. It seems to come around more frequently than that.
Yeah, look, we do it 3 years, and we do it in Parliament House, because that's where the pollies are, and that way we can attract them. And I must say, we've got a hell of a line-up of them. I'll just run through for you, if you like.
Yeah,
Jenny Macklin's open it. She's the Minister for Family, Arts and Community Service and Indigenous Affairs, and the Minister for Centrelink. The Attorney-General, Robert McClellan's following her. Then Chris Bowen, the Minister for Human Services and Child Support. Warren Snowden's coming along to talk on a new men's health policy. Justice John Foulkes is the Deputy Chief Justice of the Family Court of Australia. He's coming in to speak. Senator Steve Fielding, Kevin Andrews, MPs. Senator George Brandis is the Shadow Attorney General. And Andrew Haywood is Director of DNA Queensland. She's got a thing where she can show that you blokes can have DNA testing for about their children. And then Warwick Marsh from Dads for Kids, Fatherhood Foundation. The Honourable Albie Schultz, who's our patron. And Associate Professor Bruce Smite, who did research into shared care at the ANU, and they said that shared care is great for kids, different to what Professor Chisholm says, where he believes that it's not good for kids, and he was an ex-judge, so you can understand that. Anthony Byrne, Parliamentary Secretary to the Prime Minister. Paul Lodge, Senior Family Consultant, Family Court of Australia, and he's going to be there for an hour and a half. And that, Philippa Goodwin, the Deputy Secretary of Child Support Agency, CSA, and Wayne Butler, Shared Parenting Council, and then Samantha Page, who is the Executive Director of New Family Relationship Services. They're in turmoil because the government's ripping $40 million off them, and yet the relationship services have been so great in helping with mediation and more blokes getting shared care than ever before. And then we've got our branch presidents from around Australia speaking. So the theme of it's all around, are shared care responsibility laws working? Are these laws good for our children? Have we witnessed another second stolen generation of children? I intend asking Rudd, would he come along and give an apology for that?
Yeah.
I know he won't, but at least he'll be asked.
Yeah.
Nearly 1 million dads see their children mown more than four times a year, and yet they have orders from the court. Contravention orders are part of the Family Law Act. Why are they not being enforced? Why is the convener of these orders never punished by the court that made them? Why is domestic violence portrayed as only ever perpetrated by the male involved? And why isn't government funding shared equally between women and men's organisations? Now, that's a pretty good line-up.
No, that's a fantastic lineup.
Unfortunately, when Obama was coming out, I was told in flatly that I could no longer have the rooms, yet they've been booked for nearly 6 months. And I had an alternative set aside, but now they tell me I can have the halls because he's not coming. So it's in the main committee room in Parliament House. And I can offer accommodation those in first, but in a motel for $35 a night. That includes a cooked breakfast, and that's pretty good. And the cost of the convention for 3 days is $160. and that includes your morning, afternoon teas, etc. And that, so we've kept it to the minimum to attract people. So if anyone out there is listening and they'd like to come, they need to contact us almost immediately. So because to get into Parliament, I've got to give the names and to security at least 3 days before.
Yes, well, it's a major undertaking again, Barry, and with that enormous range of speakers, I think they're just looking. I've got the program in front of me. They're mainly on for about 15 minutes, and then it's thrown open to questions.
But some of them stay longer. Look, the one we run 3 years ago, according to Mal Brough and Senator Gary Humphrey, they were speaking in the cabinet. We broke the record in the history of Australia of ever getting three main cabinet ministers and three main senators, seven MPs and the Prime Minister stick his nose in the door all on the one day. It's never ever happened before because you can never get them sort of people together. And we broke the record on that. So I think John Stapleton was there from Dad's on Air at the time too.
Yes, that's right. Well, we'll be represented at this one as well. And there are just so many questions you could ask all of these people, I'm sure. Paul Lodge, for instance, I think he's written one of the only papers in Australia on parental alienation. So
he's good.
It'd be interesting to see what his view is. Philippa Godwin, now she replaced
Matt Miller.
Okay, so she's the deputy secretary. Rather, they don't have a general manager anymore.
Well, she's both really deputy secretary and general manager. She is a good person, a good listener. And she wants to do the right thing. I can assure you that. You know, I mean, we all blame the child support age and stuff like that, but it's the she's part of the administration, and she takes the blunt for it all, and that, and she doesn't brush aside her responsibility. I can talk to any time I want her for people with problems, you know, and stuff like that.
Well, this is just a golden opportunity to speak to these people and get concerns on the table, isn't it?
Yeah, well, the child support agency is going to have a stall there. Mm-hmm. Now, a conference like this, we're struggling. We're an organisation. We've been going 37 years. We have that many people, yet the Domestic Violence Crisis Service just had run one in Canberra. It was $100,000 it cost, and they were sponsored by the government. And they never got one federal politician. Mm. Now, we tried to get sponsorship, but, you know, it's unbelievable, the discrimination out there. Although I must say the Minister for Child Support, Chris Bowen, has been very good. When the Parliament said we couldn't have the rooms, he found us an alternative and stuff like that. So I've got to be thankful for him there, but... Mate, there's still a long way to go. More dads are getting shared care. We're tremendously happy with the new shared care laws because we're getting lots of dads get shared care, but there's still a long way to go in the violence area, in the discrimination area and stuff like that, and especially in denial of access and stuff like that, you know. It's still a long, long way to go.
Well, it's great to see you're getting this bipartisan representation as well, isn't it? Because you've got the government and some members of the opposition coming along.
Mate, we had 115 people there last time. We're not going to get this many this time. Guys, we have guys in our office here, mate, in trouncing in and out all day for help and that. And, you know, we're still taking, Lone Father still takes around 33,000 calls per annum through its branches. But blokes don't stand up and be counted. They've got all the problems and that. They want their problems solved quickly and then they're gone and they don't put the effort in to come back and give a bit of a hand, you know.
Mm. Yeah, but you sounded a bit optimistic before that there have been some improvements in things like shared parenting and there is some progress being made.
Well, there is, and the Attorney General informs me, and I don't know whether it's true or not, that they're bringing in orders for contravention. Now, they've been telling me that for 2 years, so don't hold your breath. But we're thinking of taking some sort of discrimination factor. We're going to show at this conference how much women's groups are funded against men's groups. Now, it's going to shock you. It runs into the hundreds of thousands of millions. And that, if you take the all the women's shop fronts and legal services and officer status of women and everything like that. And, you know, I figured out men's groups in Australia roughly, including Men's Line and us and the other groups that get a bit of funding. I mean, we get virtually nothing. They've just ripped 60,000 off it. I might have to close my office by the end of the year. But it's shameful the way... And the government's... and the departments are causing the friction between men and women in family breakdown because they fund one, like gender wars, you know, against the other, but one's got, like it'd look like America fighting somewhere like New Zealand, you know. And that's the situation where a lot of the problems caused by the system.
Yeah, so we have Phil York here from Dads in Distress, and they've had an ongoing battle for funding. I think you've presently got some, haven't you, Phil? But it's
Yeah, we have, and we've just been refunded for the next 12 months. But as Barry said, it's a drop in the ocean compared to what other groups get. And, you know, we're doing the same sort of work that, you know, we're looking after dads.
Well, see, these big groups that they're giving the funding to are counsellors, and they don't know nothing about child support issues or family law issues and that, and they're sending the people to us, and yet they're the ones getting the payment for it, you know.
Yeah.
It just don't make sense. But look, I've got the decision where at the end of the year, unless I can attract more funding somewhere, that I ever have to take a decision to close. This is the only national office in Australia, and we've got 22 branches around the country helping with 102 volunteers giving their time freely. And yet I've got to decide whether to close my branches or the office. But I know straight away what I'll be closing. I'll be closing the office because the branches are our lifeline. You know, they're the people out there dealing with the blood and guts and everything like that most of the time and giving their time freely. And not one of my branches are funded, you know. And I've never had a wage in my life. This is my 38th year of this, and it's all been volunteer, you know.
Yeah, I was just going to ask you how long you've been doing it. 38 years.
38 years in the day of the battle, long tan.
Yeah.
The 18th of August.
That's an extraordinary achievement you've had anyway, Barry. And look, just on, I noticed the Honourable Robert McClellan, the Attorney General, will be at the conference. Are there any developments? You know, everyone was talking about the rollback of the shared parenting legislation, and it seems to have gone quiet. Is that still on the agenda?
Well, I heard that Robert was not going to take the feminist line. Now, I heard that pretty high up. I don't know how true it is, but it came from pretty... I don't want to mention anyone in the Parliament, but I was told that briefly. See, the government gave $11 million to have a study on it, and Bruce Smyth from the ANU, he's one of our speakers, they come up with a different opinion of what Professor Chisholm come up with. The Attorney General asked me, would I work with Professor Chisholm in his office when I was meeting with him, and I said, no, I can't. And he said, why not? I said, because he's against shared care. He made that quite clear, and I can't understand why he's even given any funding to look into this, you know. And anyway, down the line, Professor Chisholm wrote to us and asked us, could he at least come and talk to us? So he came in and spent an hour and a half in our office, and I said to him straight away, I can't work with you because you're against shared care. And I myself and my organisation have been putting up a rebuttable assumption of shared care. We put the first one up ever in Australia, way back since 1980 and every year since. And Ruddick acknowledged this. And I said to Chisholm, you know... He said, no, I'm not against shared care. I'm against where the courts have not looked at violence when they're making these decisions. So we talked to him anyway, and damn and behold, I heard him on ABC radio talk back, and if he wasn't bloody against shared care, I'll stand up and, you know, scream out as loud as I bloody can, because he was against shared care. But his report is directly different to what Bruce Smyth from the ANU is. And the ANU one supports shared care, you know. So.
Oh, well, it's extraordinary the way the violence card is played, isn't it, when people make these comments without actually referring to the real figures. And in that one, I always refer people to the 1 in 3 website from Greg Andreessen, where they've got the actual figures.
And, look, they're using this dad that threw his kids over the bridge in Melbourne, right?
Yep.
They're using that. Well, they've got to stop that, and I told the government it's discrimination because I have an email sitting right on my desk here from a family who 6 weeks before, or 3 months, whatever it was not very long before, their daughter strapped their kid to her waist, her kid, and jumped over and drowned herself and the kid. Now, the family says we were told we weren't allowed to talk about it by the state government and the police, and they hushed all that up, and they're screaming out saying, why the hell is this one getting all this publicity, and we weren't even allowed to talk about it. Now, the government is holding things back, and I can tell you there's two people jumping over that bridge every day and committing suicide, and there's two jumping over the gateway in Brisbane. And I know this because it come from politicians themselves, and it came from high up in both states.
Well, that's the other, of course, the big dark figure. The governments do their best to hide all the suicide statistics, don't they?
Look, mate, the suicide, dad's in a stress state on their thing. There's 5 males a day committing suicide, and those whales, they'd be out there trying to stop. Dad's in a stress, right, although there's more than 5.
Mm.
And, you know, my branches tell me what they're dealing with in time, mate. And I go out in Canberra here, and I've got to try and stop people. You know, I get calls from a place called Support Link, and they're a big thing in Canberra, and I know they're going to Queensland now. They've been so successful. And when there's a person in that situation, they contact some organisation they know that's got experience in that, and you've got to... I mean, I've spent hours and hours and hours with guys and a couple of women and that about, you know... Thankfully, I've got to say, none of them have gone over the ride over yet, but they were close.
Well, it's...
But the government don't recognise this. They just think, oh, well, that's just day-to-day thing, you know. But if it was a woman's group, they'd be wanting to know answers. They'd be wanting everything.
And, you know, and you've been doing this for 38 years. It's a big call to keep coming back to you.
Well, mate, unless guys stand up out there and start helping themselves, you know, I won't be doing it too much longer because I'm absolutely... think that the laws are like they are, and I think a lot of it's guys' own faults because they won't stand up and be counted. I've spoke to Tony Miller a lot over the years and Warwick Marsh and people like that, you know, and shared parenting council and that, and we're busting our guts to help these people, and it's all our time and effort, yet if they don't want to stand up and help themselves and help back the groups that are helping them, then you're wasting your time, really. That's why the other side are laughing like hell at about us, you know.
Yeah, it's extraordinary, isn't it? It's probably the old male risk-taking thing, and it won't happen to me. But it's hard to understand why so many men are suffering, and yet there's no sort of real organisation. I don't know whether it might be possible to bring all the men's groups together and have a united approach. But
well, that's what I was hoping would happen. That's why I put these conferences on. I hoped they would come, but some of them have no membership, you know, and... I mean, I think Lone Fathers is really the only group that has a membership throughout Australia, and but it's just apathy, you know. They, I mean, I don't want to be running men down, but they shouldn't say, well, as you said, well, it might not. I don't think it'll happen to me, but they should look at what's going to happen to their kids if these laws are not brought in place now. Good laws, it's going to happen to their kids, mate. And I've seen people through parents, our partners, when I've been in that for a long time too, whereas, you know, it might not affect them so much. They got over it over their marriage breakdown, and I see a lot of their kids are breaking up too.
Oh, yeah. Well, there's plenty of research on that topic. And do you have any international guests coming to the conference?
We had Dr. Crooks coming out. I tried to get sponsorship for him. He was coming from Canada to speak on the shared care laws over there, and Shared Parenting Council tried to help. They tried to raise money and get sponsors over there, but unfortunately he can't come.
Oh, that's a pity. It'd be interesting
but
to get.
But I've been asked to go to Ontario and open a chapter of our organisation over there. I've been asked also to do one in New Zealand and in England, but it's great to be asked to come over and do it, but you've got to have the funds to get there.
Yeah. When you're struggling with the funds just to keep going, that's right.
But I'm hounding the Attorney General. I believe they should be funding groups not like us, not only lone fathers, but dads in distress and shared parenting council and people like that too, you know.
Absolutely. So,
and did you say yours are coming?
I'm coming, Barry. I've got to get in touch with you about that. But
yeah, we need to get into Parliament House. I've got to have the names in 3 days before,
mm-hmm.
for the security reasons. And I don't know whether you've ever been into Parliament House before. You know, I have my pass, but you blokes have to be all signed in and that, and I have to give a definite number. Also for the catering purposes.
Yep.
And also, you know.
So, Barry, if people listening want to sign up at this before it's too late, what should they do?
Well, they should contact me on 623-94650.
Okay, or they could go...
625-84216.
Right.
Or my mobile, 0417-66-8802. As I said, we have to charge them. Works out about $54 a day or something, but that includes tea and coffee and everything like that, you know, virtually all day long, and biscuits and that. But that's because it's in Parliament House, and they have private caterers there, and they charge like bloody wounded bulls. And also, if anyone wants to come and they want this cheap accommodation, they have to get in quick because it's a deal I've got, and you know it's shared with other people in the room. There could be up to 3 to 4 people in the room, but it's a nice motel. It's run by the Polish Catholic Church, and lone fathers, the women are going out there to cook breakfast for them and that. So, you know, it's a good deal for them.
Yeah, I know it well, and I completely concur with that. So I guess they could also go to your website, Barry, and get full information on the program from that.
Yeah, you know, we need to know if they're coming, and we need to have their registration in, because I've got to give the names and everything, so what passes can be made out and everything like that, you know.
Yeah.
And for lunchtime, we all go down to the staff room down there, and you can get a lunch for anything from $7, cooked lunch, and you know there's good stuff, yeah.
Yeah, that's how tax is working for us. Well, it's a wonderful program you've put together, Barry, and we wish you all the very best for next week and the 3 days in Parliament House, Canberra.
Mm.
So just letting everyone know again, you can go to the website, Lone Fathers Association, or Barry's given his phone numbers, and move quickly because it's necessary for the administration to get that going.
Yeah, I must say there's been a few drop out because when I had to advise people that it might not be in Parliament House, it would be at the Italian Club, which is about 3 minutes from Parliament House. You can see them, they're close together. Some went and got rid of their airfare tickets straight away because they thought a lot of them come for the attraction of Parliament House too, so...
Yep.
I'm not quite sure how many we're going to get, probably 40, 50, 60 or something like that.
Yeah, well, it's certainly a very prestigious location to have it. So, Barry, thank you very much for coming on the program. And as I say, we wish you all the very best for the conference next week, and we look forward to talking to you in the future.
Can I just say to all the groups out there, you know, away from Lone Fathers Association, we appreciate all the effort you guys do in your organisation. You know, if we could work closer together and that, we will win this fight.
Yeah, I can only say hear, hear. So Barry's doing his best with the Lone Fathers Association. Let's heed that message and do it. So once again, thanks very much, Barry, and
thank you, Barry.
Talk to you soon.
Bye.
Okay.
See no reason not to continue.
grows so fast. You have to cherish every moment.
Please, Daddy.
You have a right to be involved in the life of your child.
What do you care? It's not like you were ever there anyway.
Dads in Distress meet in your area every week. If you're a non-custodian parent and would like to know who to contact or just want someone to talk to, help is just a phone call away. Dads in Distress, 1300 853 437 or dadsindistress.asn.au.
We're back with Dads on the Air. And we're back with Dads on the Air, and our next guest is from the Charles Darwin University in Darwin. It's Dr. Peter Foster. Dr. Foster, are you there?
Hi there, yes, I'm here.
Oh, that's great. Now, Peter, there's been quite a bit of reporting recently on changes in the rates of assaults by young females, by girls, and I think you've following your research, you've come up with some theories as to why that might be happening.
Yeah, we're actually been based upon the some of the research that's done by Professor Jake Nagman over at the University of Queensland. And what he was finding was that adolescent girls were just as likely as adolescent boys to be involved in a kind of a range of antisocial behaviours that included things like fighting, stealing, using illicit drugs and things like that. And that's kind of consistent with and supported by studies from the Australian Institute of Health and Welfare. They've been finding similar things. And also here at the Charles Darwin University, one of my colleagues here, Dr. Mary Morris, has been carrying out some research into road rage. And as you probably know, that used to be one of those things that, you know, it was mainly associated with men. But what her research has found was, again, particularly amongst young women, there are no sex differences. Young women are just as likely as young men to, you know, sort of give an aggressive gesture, sound their horn aggressively, to hurl verbal abuse. So there's an interesting range of phenomena there that, you know, in a number of places, and there's a lot more research as well along the same sort of lines, that by and large younger women as well and adolescent girls are behaving in very similar ways to the ways that adolescent boys do. Now,
is this a change that you're finding from say studies in the past?
In some respects, it is. The idea that women are aggressive has been around for a long time. But it always used to be that it would manifest in different ways. So you would find that, for example, female aggression was more orientated towards relationships and breaking up relationships, and there was a lot more kind of verbal aggression. But what some of these studies are now finding is that the more overt ways of exhibiting aggression, you know, you've probably seen some of the videos that have been around just getting into fights in the schoolyard and things like that.
Yes,
girls
certainly
are more likely to do that than they used to be.
That's
kind of the main change. It's not so much that girls are more aggressive, it's just that they're manifesting it in more similar ways to boys these days.
Yes, I was going to say there's a lot of that material on YouTube of that sort of thing going on.
Yes.
And so what would you put that change down to? Are there any factors that have been identified?
Oh, yes. I think it's still a kind of a work in progress, but one of the things that we've had to do is to get away from the idea of testosterone being kind of one of the major factors. Apart from anything else, people who study kind of biological psychology have demonstrated that testosterone doesn't really cause violence per se, except in a very indirect way. What it causes is status seeking, or that's amongst its psychological effects. It causes people to seek status. So we've had to abandon that one, especially when you get similar kinds of behavior between, you know, sort of adolescent boys and girls. It can't be testosterone. So what Nagman said, he thinks one of the factors behind it is changes in the onset of puberty age by young females. He thinks they're getting younger, puberty starting younger, and that's having an influence. Now, that may well be a factor, but I suspect it can't be the only one because there's nothing there to kind of shape the behavior and to make it more like those of boys. So the most likely thing are some of the changes that have been taking place in society over the past couple of decades. There's been a kind of a gradual reduction, I think, in the expectation that males and females will behave differently. And we know from a number of other sources that, you know, if you change people's expectations of how they will behave, that can actually provide a plausible mechanism for the changes in behavior. So it looks as though some of these factors that have caused changes in perception more broadly within society, which are leading to things like women being more willing to participate in jobs in the workplace, you know, there's sort of the expectation that they will receive equal pay for equal work and all these sorts of things. The gradual movement of women and the changing role in the military, for example, the sort of gradual changes taking place there. There used to be the expectation that they would only get involved in kind of administrative roles or in medical roles and things like that, and now they're moving closer and closer into sort of frontline combat roles. So the change has been taking place in the expectation of how women will engage in society, and it's no longer as clearly marked. There's no longer the strong expectation that men and women will behave in very, very different ways. So it comes as actually no great surprise to find that young men and young women who've been most exposed to these kind of ideas, that there's no real significant difference between them, are more likely to behave in similar fashion.
Yes, it's always struck me as extraordinary that the women would want to be in frontline combat roles in the army, but they're working that way.
Well, there's some for sure that want to get involved in it, possibly not to the same degree as men do, but, you know, who knows what's going to happen in time. But certainly that's the direction that they're moving in.
Yes, and we're speaking with Dr. Peter Foster, who's a senior lecturer in psychology at the Charles Darwin University and chairman of the Northern Territory branch of the Australian Psychological Society. Peter has worked in the field of psychology for over 30 years, teaching, researching and consulting. And now, Peter, you've also raised the issue of feminism and whether I think that might have had an influence on the on this changing behaviour.
Oh, yes. I mean, I think it's obviously one of those things that lots and lots of factors will kind of feed into those changing expectations. So, you know, young women themselves that you know, sort of look around at the options in the world and decide, you know, that they would like to take on particular roles. So, you know, it's like women's expectations will change just because of what's available. But certainly the, you know, sort of the feminist movement, which sort of made an effort to sort of direct women to take a more work-orientated roles in society will no doubt have had an influence on that, amongst the other factors. But yeah, that will certainly have been one of the factors that guided some of these changes kind of at society-wide level.
Yes, and have you had any resistance or any objections being made to your findings and views on this from the feminist movement?
It depends whether they understand it or not. I think, all I'm doing is basically commenting on the fact that you know, feminists have been sort of part of the driving force for changing perceptions and expectations. Now, I've had some who there was a headline writer up here in Darwin who wrote a headline something to the effect of academic blames feminism for female violence, which is completely missing the point. But it certainly led to one or two complaints being made by people who assumed that that's what I'd said rather than what she said. So, yeah, I think it's one of those very sensitive areas that as soon as you work in this field, you have to expect that some people are going to react more to what they think you're saying than what you're actually saying.
Yes, well, I see the New South Wales Women's Electoral Lobby Coordinator, Kathleen Swinbourne, has objected, saying that some people try and blame feminism for everything, and feminism is not responsible for all the ills in the world.
That's certainly true. You know, we've had some changes in society, and I think what we have to do is say, you know, it's like you take the rough with the smooth. If women are participating more in constructive ways in society by taking on jobs and taking on roles that previously were done by men. You also have to expect that in some of the less socially attractive ways that they will get involved there too. You know, it's like it's just inevitable part of male and female behavior kind of converging. You get both sides of the coin.
Yeah, so it's reflected in violent crimes, and I guess it's also reflected in other areas too, other types of crime.
Is that... Well, it does. And the thing that I think seems to shock more people than anything, probably because of the kind of the rather one-sided views you tend to get in the media, is things like intimate partner violence and domestic violence. I think most people that I come across seem to have the perception that it's mainly males that are the perpetrators and females that are the victims. But in fact, what the research says, as long as you're not basing your research purely on things like police data and hospital data, which, as you probably know, are sort of kind of very biased sources of information, simply because of the massive underreporting of males as victims of violence. Men just do not want to admit to having been a victim of female violence, or at least not to anything like the extent that women tend to underreport. So there is, in fact, good reasons for thinking that about the same amount of intimate partner violence is initiated by women as by men. In other words, it's mostly kind of a relationship phenomenon that both partners are engaging in violent behavior in a small number of relationships. And it's not, you know, all men as perpetrators and all females as victims. And that really does surprise quite a lot of people.
Yes, that's higher than I would have thought. There's a website which we often promote here called One in Three, which puts the actual figures of domestic violence. But you're saying that in the younger groups, it's actually more like equal likelihood.
In some of the studies that I've seen, yes, and there's some international reviews which kind of point in a similar direction. Again, it does depend very much on the source of data that you go to. If you look at sort of, like I say, things like arrest data, then you'll get the impression that it is, you know, males are the main perpetrators and females are the main victims. But if you actually ask people what they do, if you ask men and women, you know, have you ever committed any of these acts against your partner, and just find out, you know, by asking people what behaviors they engage in, then you find that it's actually, in terms of initiation of intimate partner violence, it's about the same. And if you're looking at, for example, who gets damaged the more, then it's quite possibly the case that women are getting harmed more. But again, even that is a contentious factor it's very hard to say. And it's particularly hard to say in Australia because there aren't that many studies that have been done.
Yes,
that would get at this. Most of these are coming from. There are one or two in Australia, but most of them come from other parts of the world. So it is in those parts of the world where we have been exposed to sort of the ideas of men and women behaving more similarly, that you get this kind of phenomenon. In some of those cultures where males tend still to be a dominant force within society, and where there are expectations that men and women will behave in very different ways, then as far as we're aware, it is more likely to be that males will be committing the violence and females will be the victims. But in Western societies, that seems to be less and less the case.
That's very interesting. Well, certainly, yes, I'm sure the reporting is a big factor in that. And I know in hospitals in New South Wales, for instance, there's a questionnaire when you're admitted, and, you know, including did this injury occur as a result of violence from a man? You know, but there's no counterpart saying to a man, did this occur from violence from a woman? So automatically, you're going to get some skewed figures there.
Well, and that's been true of almost all research into domestic violence for a long, long time. It was just implicit assumption that it would be committed by men, and so the only kind of studies that were done were of you know, they're asking females about their experience of violence by male partners. So, and it's only in very, very recent years that we're starting to find out that, for example, there is quite substantial levels of violence in lesbian relationships. Mm. More so, as far as we can tell. Again, it's one of those areas, it's hard to find out, but it seems to be at higher levels than in heterosexual relationships. Mm. So it does point to some reasons for sort of the need to sort of look more closely at violence by females than has been true in the past. But it is still true. If you look around, for example, in the website of the Australian Bureau of Statistics, it's a lot easier to find data on male violence than female violence, for example.
Yes, it's easy to pigeonhole, isn't it, and say it's all men against women, and then you can sort of narrow down the blame, if you like. But it's actually, you know, certainly on this station, we are against all violence: male, female,
yep,
child, female child. It's all violence, and it's all going to be.
Yeah, exactly, and that's why I would suggest that up here in the top end, there's sort of an advertising campaign going on at the moment about encouraging men to intervene to prevent violence. At the moment, it's mainly orientated towards males, again, as the perpetrators of violence, and I think. Nowadays, the research suggests you also, if you want to cut down on violence generally within society, then we also need to be sort of targeting these programs at young women as well as at young men.
Yes, and we've been speaking with Dr. Peter Foster from the Charles Darwin University, a senior lecturer in psychology at the university. Peter, thank you very much for coming on the show, and it's very interesting to get your view on some of these on this area where there's so many ignorant figures being bandied about rather than getting the actual truth and getting some genuine research in the area.
Thanks very much.
So thank you very much for the work you're doing, and thanks again for coming on the program.
You're very welcome. My pleasure.
Thanks, Peter.
Thanks, Sam.
Welcome back to Dad's on the Air on this 8th day of June 2010. That was interesting speaking with Dr. Peter Foster on the changes in the level of violence with young females. Returning now to this Crime and Justice Statistics Bureau brief about the rates in New South Wales, at least. It's interesting to look at the offences that females are most likely to commit. And top of the list, perhaps unsurprisingly, is shoplifting with 15% of all female offenders. Non-domestic violence assault is up to 9% of female offenders. Fraud, 7%. Possess use drugs, 7%. And commit domestic violence assault, 5% of all female offenders. Over the same time, male offenders, the split with the most likely crimes for male offenders were domestic violence assault is at 8%, drugs 8%, non-domestic violence 7%, maliciously damaged property 7%, and offensive behaviour 5%. So it's a more even spread, but it's not something that you tend to hear when the figures are bandied about. The domestic violence is about the same level as the possession of use or drugs, about 8% of all male offenders. As I mentioned before, though, we do need to keep in mind that that there are more male offenders than females, although from the figures that Dr. Peter Foster was quoting in his studies, it's more even. So there's a discrepancy there between perhaps national figures and the New South Wales figures. But as to the question as to whether female participation in specific offences has changed, the answer from the New South Wales Bureau of Statistics is a clear yes. So there are trends in the with female offences, and the trend is going up. This is as to the factors. We had Peter Foster's views on what's causing that. It's perhaps he puts it mostly to a change in society's approach or society's
expectations,
values.
As he said.
Yep, the expectations and all that's flowing through to lots of occupations, even when you look at the roles that females are now playing in the army. And you notice that at the Olympics, next Olympics, is going to be women's boxing for the first time. So, and that's not something that many of us would applaud, I suspect. But these are the areas which are now opening up in a social sense, and it's also flowing through in the types of offences that females are committing.
But once again, in the causes, I mean, everybody seems to want to ignore the elephant in the room, which is family breakdown. He didn't specifically mention family breakdown. He mentioned feminism, which I thought was interesting, as a cause of family breakdown. But surely family breakdown, fatherlessness, the inability to have a meaningful relationship with your father. I mean, surely this is a fundamental issue that people should at least be aware of. It amazes me that we do all these studies and there's no mention. This is not even mentioned. It's all these other causes. Yes, oh, computer games and too much violence on television and, oh, girls reaching puberty earlier. But, what about family breakdown? What about fatherlessness? Surely that is a more profound cause than computer games or some of these other things.
Yes, I think you'd have to agree, but it's coming from a number of different areas. I mean, there's the overall cause of family breakdown, and then you go to the next step, and what is causing that family breakdown? And there are a number of factors there that we've identified this morning, and also last week when we spoke to Maggie Hamilton as to what's causing these. So the next step, once we identify it and accept it that there are these changes, I suppose the next step is then, well, what are we going to do about it? And that's when it gets difficult.
Absolutely. Nobody particularly wants to talk about that. We're still busy obfuscating over the causes and pretending that most of them aren't real and don't exist. But, then to actually get around to doing something about solving it. But is the problem soluble? I mean, how can you... you know, we're seeing behavioural problems, I mean, not just in young girls and young boys, I mean, across the board, young people. And this corresponds with a huge increase in divorce and family breakdown, and nobody just seems to want to draw the obvious conclusion. You know, we're looking everywhere else, but, you know, but at the forest for the trees. Oh, there's no trees in the well. Oh, there's no trees in the desert. Look in the forest, people.
Well, we might go for a short break. We'll be back soon.
In distress, meet in your area every week. If you're a non-custodian parent and would like to know who to contact or just want someone to talk to, help is just a phone call away. Dads in Distress, 1300 853 437 or dadsindistress.asn.au.
We're back with Dads on the Air.
Welcome back to Dads on the Air this 8th day of June 2010. And we're just trying to get on the line a special surprise guest. Seems to be having some trouble with the phone lines, but hopefully we'll be able to cross to him in a moment. So just while we're waiting to get that call, we might Just ask you, Ian, you've recently been to Thailand.
I have indeed, yes.
And you've got any observations you can share with us?
Well, I've got lots of observations, as you well know, Bill. It's a completely different society to our society. It's a different culture, different system of morality. They don't seem to be having the same divorce crisis in Thailand that we're having here, although there is quite a lot of divorce. But like I said, it's a completely different culture. They've got a different view of morality than our sort of Judeo-Christian view. Where we sort of believe that thou shalt not do this and thou shalt not do that. The Buddhist system is pretty very different to that. They don't have the thou shalt nots. They don't have the overview of a God up in the sky looking down on everybody, judging them for their actions. They believe in karma, which unfolds over many lifetimes. And if you create bad karma, you will have to live through the consequences at some time in your future. So there is a different view, and this does come through in people's morality and in the way that relationships are, and they don't seem to be having the same feminist you'd call it, the feminist revolution, I guess, that we've had for the last 40 years here. Thai women are still feminine and proud of their femininity, and Thai men are still masculine and proud of their masculinity, and never the twain shall meet. The women aren't running around trying to be men, and the men aren't running around trying to be women. And it was quite interesting recently with the red shirts and all of that kerfuffle that seems to have been cleared up from what I've been able to talk to people in Bangkok, that they cleared out the nest of the red shirts, and the problem seems to, at this stage, to have dispersed with them. They haven't sort of set up alternative headquarters. But anyway, getting back to what I was saying, in that situation, they got the women and the children out from behind the barricades, and it was, as usual, the men left there to stand up to defend the territory and fight for honour and dignity and whatever else it is that us blokes are supposed to fight for. There weren't any women volunteering to man the barricades. One would imagine if that was happening over here, we would probably have more women on the barricades, I would imagine, insisting that they were just as worthy of being shot at and maimed and run over by tanks as any man was. And of course that the cause was just as important to them as it was to any man, but no, they still got this, I guess you could say, old-fashioned way of looking at things over there, which is quite a different system to what we've got going here. And you do notice that in Southeast Asia, and of course it's a third world country, they don't have the same wealth and resources that we have here, which is a good thing, because it tends to keep families together. The children don't have all these newfangled computer toys to play with. They don't have the options. They don't have a television in every room like we do. They just simply don't have as many options to go out and muck themselves up like we do. So, look, that's my point of view. But on the line, all the way from Bangkok, we have one of the founders of this program. We have Mr. John Stapleton. John, are you there?
Yes, I'm here. How are you?
Oh, I'm very well, mate. Good to hear your voice. Good to hear you're still alive.
Not sure how much credit I have on this phone, so if I suddenly drop out, you'll know the credit just ran out.
All right, well, I better shut up and let you talk. Would you like to give us a bit of... I've just been giving a bit of a bleat about my experiences over there in Thailand. Would you like to talk about yours?
What exact aspect of the experience here would you like to discuss?
Well, as you know, this program's called Dads on the Air. I believe you were responsible for coming up for the name. Anything that would be relevant to fathers regarding relationships, regarding the divorce situation over there? I was just talking about the red shirts. They had that uprising going on that seems to have been dispersed.
Yes, Bangkok has largely settled back to normal, and the streets are clear now and easy to get around. You know, a lot of buildings were burnt and people killed. There's a lot of tension. Prime Minister's announced that there'll be early elections. So in some ways, the red shirts won a sort of victory, and that was what they wanted. As for other aspects of society...
Well, John, it's... John,
diverse.
John, it's Bill Cable.
John,
Bill Cable, and it's great to be talking to our foreign correspondent. With all that going on in the community, is that, have you noticed any effect on the families over there? Is there more pressure on the families?
Oh, no, I don't No, not really. The red shirts were the sort of come from the poorer sort of rural districts and have a lot of support, particularly in the north of the country. And in fact, the poll shows that they have something like 76% support. The Thai families are very, are very close, and the children are astonishingly well cared for. They're quite an amazing people, really.
Mm. So you don't have the same tension that we sometimes feel in Australia about with the relationships between husbands and wives and children?
No, you don't really. There's a remarkable sexual fluidity in Thailand.
I think that was the end of John's phone card on that amazing sexual fluidity he described it as. That's very interesting. You know, we think we'll just... dispense with that beeping and buzzing. I think his phone card just rang out. But anyway, as you can tell, anybody out there who was wondering what happened to John Stapleton, well, as you can tell, Bangkok Johnny is alive and well and in Bangkok celebrating the joys of having retired from his journalistic gig that he held down for 25 years. He is enjoying himself, I guess, out there in the world.
It's great to hear from John, and I'm sure he... he'll be pleased to hear from Dads on the Air, having started it all those years ago, and we're still carrying on the good work. John's put in so many years of getting this show on the road and doing a lot of good work for fathers and for children and for families over a very extended period.
Yes, he's a true champion of the men's movement, is John Stapleton.
So we'll try and get Johnny back other times in the future. We've got a couple of correspondents now. We're still hoping to hear from Ken Thompson. He's been trying to get us today, apparently, but we'll eventually catch up with him and get a blog from him. We've now got John Stapleton up there in Bangkok, so we're getting this network of foreign correspondents to bring to you.
As soon as I can get a plane ticket and get out of here, I'll be really happy to jump on the list somewhere too. Send me somewhere obscure where we don't have a correspondent.
So number three, we've got we're up to three foreign correspondents. So this is great stuff. Well, we might have one more break and then we'll wrap it up.
Well, I come home, baby, and I've been working all night long. Put my daughter on my knee, and she said, "Daddy, what's wrong?" She whispered in my ear so sweet. You know what she said? She said, part of town. Mm. And I go see her sometime. We make love so fine. I put my head on her shoulder. She said, "Tell me all the trouble." You know what she said? She said, "Daddy, I'm a fool."
Just about run out of time in this edition of Dad's on the Air. We'd like to thank our guests today, Dr. Peter Foster from the Charles Darwin University and Barry Williams, who's the National President of the Lone Fathers Association. So stay tuned next week. We've got a big show lined up for next week. We're going to be speaking to Dr. Richard Warshak, who is the guru of parental alienation, and he's got a new DVD out on the subjects which we'll look forward to talking to him about. So if you want to listen to this show, remember it's available. It'll be available on the net in the next day. Go to our website, www.dadsontheair.net. And until then, we wish you all the best for a great week. Stay tuned now for Country On with Country Bob. And until then, it's bye from Dad's on the Air.
We're dead.